Don Johnson at the time gave me a call. I was in Florida, and he said, "Jerry, I know you know Sam very well. Would you ask if he would come to Chicago for our centennial party?" And I said, "Absolutely. Give me 10 minutes. I'll get right back to you." I called Sam, and before I even asked him, you know, what I wanted to ask him, because it was about the Western Golf Association, he replied back to me. He said, "Jerry, whatever happened to the Western Open?" He says, "That was the greatest event that we all played in for years and years and years. It traveled around the country, and he said, we never missed it. And the professionals at that point in time always looked at the Western Open as the fifth major. And it's really too bad that it's gone, because I think that's really affected Chicago golf a lot, because I think if the Western Open would have remained in Chicago, I think we could have grown it into something very, very special and made it that fifth major, which I think we could have made happen. But anyway, that's all history. Those are things I think we can continue to work on. I'm not going to take a lot of time. I just want to thank everybody for being part of Rich Harvest Farms today. To give you a little bit of background, I built the golf course over 10 years. I always had an interest in golf course design. My dad wanted to be an engineer. Me to be an engineer, I wanted to be a geologist or do something with agronomy. And my major at NIU was math and physics, and my minor was in earth science. They didn't have engineering. They didn't have agronomy. So I kept him very happy, and I went on to help him out in business for 25 or 30 years because he needed help, and that was probably the right decision. But I finally had the opportunity back in the middle 80s to purchase a piece of property, which is made up of 1,800 acres. In doing that, I talked to my wife and I said, this is my opportunity to design my first golf hole, which I've always wanted to do. I grew up as a caddy at Butterfield Country Club, and I remember doodling on the back of scorecards. You know, I just fell in love with the way green complexes were put together and the bunkering and what have you. And I don't know why as a kid, but I just had an interest in it. So we started, and I designed my first six holes, which led to three more after a year or two because I got a little bored of playing three sixes, so I thought it'd be more fun playing two nines to have 18 holes. Then I added a 10th hole and an 11th hole, and I remember telling my wife, I said, gee whiz, we only need seven more to complete it. So after 10 years, we completed the golf course. And I always kept in mind in the design of the golf course that I wanted to be absolutely sure that when you play the golf course, you could never tell which were the original six holes, nine holes, 10th hole, or 11th hole. And over the past 15 years, I've had at least 200 Golf Digest panelists and other panelists from various magazines out. And I always play with every one of them. And when we get on the first hole, I said, when we get all done, name the six original or the six or the nine original holes. And after, since 1998, since we've completed, nobody has gotten it right yet. So your challenge today, if you've never played here before, and I know there's going to be a little cheating because some of you have played here before and I've clued you in, but if you've never played here before, use that as a challenge and determine whether you can tell me what the original six or the original nine holes were. And since nobody's been able to do it, that gave me acceptance that I did it right. So that, anyway, it's been very special. I've had a lot of fun. We're deeply involved here at Rich Harvest with kids golf. We have our Kids Golf Foundation, which brings golf to all the inner cities in the state of Illinois. We have approximately 100 coordinators, all volunteer. We train them here at Rich Harvest during the wintertime in our indoor arena, which is an 18,000 square foot arena. And they come up and then they go back to their communities. And then our foundation funds everything 100% from the golf clubs that they would get to all of the special information or that the coordinators need to conduct their clinics. Our foundation funds all of that. So if you're going to ask me what was the most important thing in Rich Harvest Farms, it's not the car collection, which I've had a lot of fun putting together over 55 years. It's really not the golf course. It's really what we do to put clubs in kids' hands throughout the state of Illinois. And when you meet with these kids, and most of them are inner city kids, and we teach them the life skills of the importance of staying in school and staying off of drugs, and teach them some of the rules of the game, if we can help one child from the streets of Chicago, we feel we've done our job. But I can tell you, we've done a lot more than one. And I commend our foundation for doing the job that they do. The Western Golf Association, the tremendous job that they've done over the years with the Evans Scholarship Foundation, and our kids. When I started and I had 18 holes, I made it a pact that I was going to have a membership, and the membership, we also would have a caddy program. So ever since I've had a membership, we've had a caddy program, and we've got today over 150 kids that are in our program. And one of the things that we make that's very important to these kids is they've got to learn the etiquette that's involved in being a caddy. And I found out one of the most important things, believe it or not, is the jumpsuit that they wear and the green hat that they wear. And many days over the last 10 years where it was 110 degrees outside, I went out and I bought shorts, Bermuda shorts for the kids, and I bought t-shirts, and I told them they can wear those if they'd like. And not one of them would take their jumpsuit off. They said, "Mr. Rich, we're not taking our jumpsuit off." They're so proud to be a caddy here and the things that they've learned over the years that this is what it's all about. And I thank Western Golf for all of that, because this is what the Evans Scholarship Foundation is all about. We're very happy to be part of all of that. So thank you for that. The girls are going to drop off a folder to everybody before lunch. It has a nice brochure about our Kids Golf Foundation in there. It tells a little bit of the history of Rich Harvest Farms. And then also, I think most of you know it, that we've got the International Crown here, which is an LPGA event. I fell in love with the LPGA back in 2002, and we had a very successful Solheim Cup here. And after that success, I got a hold of the commissioner, Michael Wan, and I says, "Michael, we have to put a new tournament together for the LPGA. And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "In women's golf, the best players in the world are not like the Ryder Cup from Europe or America. In women's golf, the best players in the world are from Asia. And we've got to create a new event." And now that brings in 7 other countries in the world. They have to qualify for that. But it gave us an opportunity in the city of Chicago to activate all of the ethnic groups, because it's unbelievable. I never knew there were over 100,000 Koreans that live in the Chicagoland area. I never knew that there were over 100 and some odd thousand Chinese people that live in the city of Chicago, or Swedish people, or Taiwanese, or Thailand, or Japanese, or people from Sweden. So we've been activating all of those various ethnic groups, and when the tournament comes here in 2016, I guarantee you, there will not be just 30,000 Americans. There will be everybody cheering for their particular country. And that's what Chicago is all about, and that's what we're very excited about bringing to our great city. So thank you very much. Have fun today.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the 2014 Western Amateur medalist, Doug Gim. Doug is a native of Arlington Heights, Illinois. Doug just completed a successful freshman season at the University of Texas. He was named first team All Big 12 and has notched 8 top 10 finishes this year. Doug earned medalist honors at the 2014 Western Amateur with a 14 under 270 at the Beverly Country Club in Chicago. And he was the first player from the Chicago area in 30 years to claim medalist honors. The bogey-free 8 under 63 that he shot in the second round broke the Beverly course record set by Tom Weisskopf at the 1967 Western Open. Ladies and gentlemen, let's bring up Doug Gim. Doug? You've played in many prestigious amateur and now collegiate events, so where does the Western Amateur rank for you on that list? And talk a little bit about that experience.
Well, the Western Amateur is definitely at the top of the list. Like you said, the Western Amateur is one of the hardest tournaments to win in any kind of level of competition in golf. You know, the format, the depth of the field, it's so difficult to win. You know, two different formats, stroke play and match play. The combination is incredible, and you know, it's awesome to see that every year the Sweet 16 are usually the top 16 kids or adults, I should say, in the world, and they all come down to those. So it's awesome.
And great. So your game has certainly evolved since 2014 at Beverly. You know, what areas do you feel like you've improved in going to school? And talk a little bit about your game right now.
I'm happy where my game's at this rate. Most of the things that I've learned from college and that I've been trying to get better at is preparation and mental. I think it's usually you know, overlooked as a skill in golf is how to prepare for a tournament. And I think throughout the past year, I've learned a lot how to think my way through a golf course and to handle the ups and downs throughout a round competitively.
So do you think that mental ability, along with the physical ability to compete in this championship, is really what it takes to win the Western Amateur? I mean, what does it take, you think? Obviously, you know, getting the medalist honors and then going into match play, you know, what does it take from a golf perspective to achieve the victory?
It takes a lot of things. It takes guts. It takes intelligence to know when to go for certain shots or to lay back, and it takes strategy, but it takes endurance. You have to be smart, but you have to realize that each hole is its individual battle, and you can lose some of them, but as long as you're winning most of them, that's all that really matters. You can't get too caught up in what's going on around you. Like I said earlier, the Western Am is like a major to us, and it's really important to us, and every person in the field wants to win, and the names that are associated, like Tiger and Phil and Jordan Spieth, it would mean a lot to all of us, but if you can concentrate and not think about all those things and just think about the one shot you're playing, you'll be successful.
So, you know, growing up in the Chicagoland area, you've etched your name on one of those trophies over there. What would it mean growing up, living in Chicago, to put your name on the winner's trophy?
It would mean everything. Coming from Chicago, you know, I understand it's tough to play well because we only got so many seasons to play. But to play in such a stacked field with the strongest field of golf that any amateur tournament could provide, to win that would probably be the best accomplishment that I could ever have.
So, Doug, the difference between stroke play and match play in your mind, how do you have to reset yourself once you qualify for the Sweet 16? And how do you look at the course differently if you do?
The difference between stroke play and match play, you know, it's talked about a lot, but, you know, when you're playing stroke play, you're not so much playing your competitors, you're playing the golf course. So, you know, everyone goes out in their practice rounds and they try to figure out what they think is the best way to attack a golf course. And each player, I'm sure, you know, inside their heads puts up a number that they think they need to shoot. They try to go through that game plan as best as they can. But in match play, it's a little bit different. Yeah, there's still strategy. You're still playing the same golf course, but now you're playing in a competitor, and only thing that really matters is you're beating your competitor in each hole. So strategy could change, clubs off the tee could change. You know, it's different, and you know, you only have so many holes that you can play against this competitor, especially if you get off to a lead or if they go off to the lead, the holes that you get to play get smaller. So, you know, it's very different, but, you know, you're still playing the same golf course, and that game plan will still come into play.
So, Doug, I'm sure nobody asks you about Jordan Spieth, you know, going to the same school. You know, when you go into that facility, you know, we've been there, we've hosted a Western Junior, you know, seeing the names of the players that have played at Texas, you know, what does that mean to play there and certainly under Coach Fields and the squad that you guys have this year?
It's an honor to play for such a prestigious program. For the names that have been there, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Kite, you know, Jordan Spieth, of course. It means a lot, and, you know, every time we come out to practice, you know, there's things of Spieth everywhere, like the tournaments he's won, the accolades that he's had. You know, he's a first-team All-American, and now he's got the Masters and the U.S. Open under his belt. You know, it drives us. We see it every day. We see the things that he's done, you know, his Ryder Cup and Walker Cup bags and what have you. It's inspiring, and it's really cool to be a part of. I mean, even the guys on my team, obviously Bo, having won this week or this tournament last year, playing the U.S. Open as well, he did, and Scotty and Gavin, we all push each other, and we look up to Mr. Crenshaw, we look up to Mr. Kite, and we obviously look up to Jordan, and we all hope to get to the tour one day.
Well, Doug, thanks for being here today. Great playing last year. We look forward to seeing you back in August. Now I introduce Nick Hardy, who's a native of Northbrook, Illinois. Nick finished runner-up at the 2014 Western Junior last year and advanced to the Sweet 16 a month later at the 2014 Western Amateur. Went on to join Coach Mike Small at the University of Illinois, where he helped the Illini win the 2015 Big Ten Men's Golf Championship. He was the co-medalist at the Big Ten Championship. He was all Big Ten first team and was named the conference's Freshman of the Year. The best was yet to come, however. Nick qualified for and made the cut at the 2015 U.S. Open at Chambers Bay last month. He finished tied for 52, ahead of major championship winners like Phil, Ernie Els, Angel Cabrera, and Zach Johnson. So let's bring him up, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Hardy. So, Nick, you know, certainly what's fresh on everybody's mind was seeing you play at the U.S. Open. Tell us a little bit about that experience, what you took away from that. How was that? How did you prepare for that? You know, give us a little background on your experience just a few weeks ago.
Well, I prepared no differently for the U.S. Open. You know, I just kind of went there treating it like any other tournament I'd try to play in. It was an incredible experience, and for me to play the weekend as well was just even better. It was a huge learning curve for me, and being able to compete against the best, and I felt like, you know, being able to hang with them, it gives me a lot of confidence, and going forward, I feel like I can compete with them.
So your score on Friday set the cut line. Did you know it at the time? I mean, you had a lot of guys who were kind of, you know, their fate rested in your hands a little bit. Did you realize that at the time? I mean, in order to set the cut and have some pretty big names that ultimately made the weekend because of you?
Coming down the stretch, I knew that four over was going to be safe. So I knew that number was a lock, but on number 9 tee, my last hole, I figured out that five was okay too, and I hit a pretty bad tee shot on the 9 tee, and I was in a tough spot. I didn't get up and down for par, but I knew that I was safe, and then I got in a clubhouse and found out that I was tied for 60th, so I was on the number, and I just thought, wow, I just made a lot of people happy. But yeah, some pretty big names came up to me too, so it was pretty cool. You know, I was the last tee time out there, so I was the last one to come in, and the next day some names like Webb Simpson and Camille came up to me, so it was pretty weird having them come up to me thanking me for them playing the weekend, but they said they had their bags packed and everything.
That must have been a special experience the entire week, but you also had a great summer last year, you know, playing at how you did at the Western Junior, making it into the Western Amateur, making it into the Sweet 16. You know, talk about the summer that you had last year, and, you know, did that kind of catapult the rest of the year for you and kind of carry over into this season?
Yeah, I playing both Western events, I played pretty well at them. I felt like I was just well prepared, and I was confident last summer, and you know, it kind of made the transition going to college season much smoother, and it gave me more confidence, and you know, it was pretty special to play well in both those events.
And certainly playing for a great program like University of Illinois under Coach Small. Talk about a little bit about what you learned in your first year being on the Illini golf team.
Yeah, the transition was made pretty easy because I had some great upperclassmen teammates to help me out, and Coach Small, obviously. So I learned a lot with Coach Small. He taught me a lot about course management and mental side of the game, and I learned a lot about myself, how, you know, I handle myself on the course too. I felt like in that respect I got a lot better. I also learned a lot of just more about, you know, learned the game more. Yeah, mentally and practicing with older guys like Thomas Dietrich, Charlie Danielson, and Brian Campbell. You know, they're great competitors, and being able to practice with them each day and compete with them, it was pretty special to have them with me too.
So you obviously you played at Beverly last year at the Western Amateur. You're very successful. You know, what do you think it takes to win the Western Amateur? You know, going through the stroke play and then ultimately, you know, potentially changing the game plan a little bit going into match play. Tell us a little bit about that and what you think it takes to kind of get to the next level.
Well, it's just a really long week in general. You gotta really. I think it's about not expending your energy so much earlier in the week and just, you know, trying to not focus so much on the cuts. Just try to play your game. You know, play. Play smart and just got to play solid all the way through. But really just this, you know, transition going to match play, you got to reset your focus and kind of just start the tournament over in a sense. And, you know, you're playing, like Doug said, you're playing the course a lot differently in match play. So kind of just come out with a new game plan as well.
Does anybody have any questions for Nick? We can open it up.
Hey, Nick, can you just talk about Rich Harvest Farms and what you know about the course and some of the challenges it could have in your game?
I've actually never been out here before. It's my first time playing Rich Harvest. I've heard many great things about the course. I'm excited to play it, finally see it. But other than that, I don't know much about it.
Is it harder for Illinois to be a national golf power when you're not down south or California where people play 12 months a year? And then how, if it is, how has Illinois overcome that to be such a great golf school?
Yeah, it's definitely harder to have success in college golf being in the north. But, you know, I think it just starts with Coach Small and his, you know, mindset with how things are. You know, we just got to, throughout the winter, we're indoors all winter, so you got to find ways to be able to improve and get better in the wintertime. Not being able to be outside, it's much more difficult. And trying to sustain the confidence in your game throughout the winter, that's a big challenge for us too. But being able to go down south in the winter and come down to Florida for a weekend in February or January, it definitely helps out. And it's just about the mental battle of being able to prepare enough for tournaments in the winter too. So, you know, Coach Small has dealt with that for 15 years. He's been the coach, so he's found ways for us to get better throughout the winter as well.
Nick, 21 months ago, you were finishing up a high school career, and you clicked off a lot of good things on a list of what other people would call career accomplishments since. What's your career flight path in your mind, and has it changed in the last few months, considering what you've done?
Honestly, I don't look that far into the future with things. I just kind of try to keep them better in the present future and focus on my next tournament and my goals going into the next tournament. I don't really think that far into the future, so I just try to keep setting the bar higher and accomplish bigger and better things each time I play.
And in the near future, you've got a couple big events in the Chicagoland area, obviously the Western Amateur and then the U.S. Open. I'm sorry, U.S. Amateur being at Olympia Fields this year. You know, obviously, you know, you and Doug both being from the area. Talk a little bit about having two, you know, pretty major amateur championships in your backyard and maybe sleeping in your own bed, I don't know, during that week. But talk a little bit about that and really what it would mean from you growing up in Chicago to win the Western Amateur.
Yeah, having these tournaments at home, it's pretty nice, honestly. Like to have the Western at Rich Harvest and then the USAM at Olympia Fields, it's cool to have it at home. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to sleep in my house because it's kind of far drive to make each day. But winning the Western Amateur would, you know, mean a lot to me because it's probably the best amateur event in the world. So competing against the best, 156 players in the world, and during the long week and you know, it's just about trying to keep getting better and throughout the week of the tournament. And then once you win it, you know, it's just, you know, you've beat the best players in the world. So it'd give me a lot of confidence and it'd mean a lot to me to win the Western Am.
Any other questions? We have one more right over here. Rory.
Nick, after playing with some of the pros out at the U.S. Open, and of course, Brian's playing at the, your teammate is playing at John Deere this summer. Are you going to start to look to perhaps write some letters to some of these tournaments to see if you can play in some tour events on an exemption over the next couple of years before you wrap it up at Illinois?
Yeah, that'd be definitely something on my list to do. I think I should definitely look into that and, you know, try to make some connections with the people in those tournaments because, you know, one day I probably will be looking for exemptions like that. I think it'd be very special to look into that. And I know Brian did the same thing this past few months. He's been trying to get the John Deere, and he finally did. So, you know, I think that'd be something that I'd definitely look forward to in the future.